You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahi ahi mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toku ingoa.
Ko Sofia toku ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora mea, how are you this week?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. I feel like I've kind of recovered post-art fair now.
Oh my god, yeah, I forgot that was... Yeah.
That happened, that actually that happened last week.
That happened last week. I know, our show last week was so jam-packed.
Yeah.
There was so much going on. I feel like we're back to our regular scheduling.
Regular programming.
But last week was fun. It was fun to have heaps of fun art momentum going on.
Yeah, totally. The city is alive.
It is alive. And it's still alive. There's still a lot on.
There is. Yep. And we're talking all about it today. Man, yes. What have we got?
Yeah, I spoke to artist Antonia Barnett McIntosh about her current exhibition on At Room, A Ponder of Transported Local Delicacies. So what have you got?
I caught up with curator Hutch Wilco of Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki's newly opened exhibition Forever Tomorrow, Chinese Art Now, the first major survey of Chinese contemporary art to be shown in Aotearoa.
Here, Aha or Fakara, would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patahi mai, you can text us on 5395-5355 or why am I dying? Give us a call in the studio on 309-3879.
Also, after the show, koa e ware ware e ahea nakoto te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō hei pakihere roki roki maronga i te paitukutuku o irirangi poho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Oh, that's a good art!
Last weekend, Forever Tomorrow, Chinese Art Now opened at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki. Curated by Hutch Wilco, the exhibition is the first major survey of Chinese contemporary art to be shown in Aotearoa. Split into four connected themes and showing 67 works by 42 artists and collectives, Forever Tomorrow traverses through four decades of accelerated major transformation in China, examining the experiences of artists from China's reform and opening up in 1978 right to the present day. The first theme, Stones from Other Mountains, explores artists' experiences with the body as action, the instability of language, and the capacity of photography, performance, and moving image to propose realities post-reform. In the second, People Mountain, People Sea, artists are seen turning their attention to the ground beneath their feet, connecting with the land amongst the changing landscapes around them and a period of mass migration to China's cities. The third, Tender Revolutions, looks inward to private lives, attitudes towards intimacy and sexuality, and personal expression. And the fourth and final, In the Clouded Realms, sees artists addressing the architecture of the internet and the behaviour it elicits, navigating the rapidly developing digital era. Merging China's history and the lived experiences of these artists, the works in Forever Tomorrow seek to subvert the idea of China as exceptional, proposing rather a shared global experience, that of living in a state of Forever Tomorrow. I caught up with curator of the show, Hutch Wilco, about Forever Tomorrow, Chinese Art Now, and his curatorial process.
So my name is Hutch Wilco. I am the curator for Forever Tomorrow. I guess it came about through a number of different ways. I started travelling and working and eventually living in China, based in Shanghai from 2012. Mm. And when I first moved there, I was working for a commercial gallery space and eventually set up my own company, which was an exhibition development company. So we would create exhibitions for different museums and galleries across China. For a number of years. To put it in context, I guess, you know, the time that I was living and working there, there was on average one museum opening somewhere in the country every day. So it was a, you know, it was an incredible time to be there. It just an absolute hive of activity, and I was lucky enough to meet with a lot of artists, mm-hmm. and work with a lot of different artists and curators. Many of the artists that I worked with in that period are featured in the exhibition here at the Auckland Art Gallery. The exhibition has been in development, I guess, for a little bit more than a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
until it opened last weekend.
Yeah, as you say, a major survey of contemporary Chinese art, Forever Tomorrow, Chinese Art Now, opened at Auckland Art Gallery Toyotamaki last week. It's an incredible show, taking the viewer through 67 works by 42 artists and collectives through four connected themes, exploring how artists in China have responded to major transformation from China's reform and opening up in 1978 to present day. I guess to introduce the show, can you tell me a bit about how you first approached curating this exhibition? What was important to you right from the beginning in shaping the show?
I think there were a number of things at play, of course, with an exhibition like this. It's the first major exhibition of Chinese contemporary art in New Zealand. Mm. There's never been a major survey of Chinese contemporary work here. And so I guess in a sense there's a little bit of audience servicing that has to be done. So the four themes of the exhibition take as their starting point the reform and opening up, as you said, in 1978, which was this period of time where China opened to the world, both economically, socially, in terms of opening up to travel, foreign investment, but also it was really the first time that artists were able to travel outside of China, with the exception of Russia. Mm. Many artists until that time worked directly for the state. The predominant style was socialist realism. Many artists would go to Russia for their artistic education, for example. But post-78, you've got this huge wave of both artistic information coming into the country, but you have that first wave of artists going out. Ai Weiwei, for example, travels to New York, studies at the Parsons School, meets and mingles with Andy Warhol, encounters the work of Marcel Duchamp, Joseph Beuys, and all of that information comes back with them. You have an introduction of art magazines unofficially being published across the country, but also, of course, post-1976-77, at the end of the Cultural Revolution, you have the universities reopen. They'd been closed for a decade. So you get these two schools that really open in Beijing and in Hangzhou, just south of Shanghai. And so the first section of the exhibition really looks at that early period of the first wave, and its culmination in 1985 with the 85 New Wave movement, which really wasn't one movement. It was the effect of hundreds of different artistic groups across the country coming together, experimenting with an international art vernacular that had been introduced. So artists very, very quickly start working through the 20th century canon of Western art, working with Impressionism, Expressionism, Cubism, up to conceptualism, pop art, and postmodernism. So you have this massive engagement with these different practices. Following that, at the end of the 1980s, you have this really critical moment with the 1989 China Avant-Garde exhibition, which was really kind of meant to be a sort of a kicking off and an official recognition of contemporary art in the country. The exhibition opened up in early February 1989, and it was almost immediately closed. There was a performance work by an artist called Xiao Lu, where she had an installation in the display, and she decided that she would do a performance work that included shooting a gun at her own work. The exhibition was immediately shut down, and while it did open a couple of days later, it was later referred to as the curtain call for the avant-garde in China. Of course, 2 months later, the student protests erupted all across the country, particularly in Beijing and most crucially in Tiananmen Square. And with the subsequent crackdowns that came, artistic expression kind of went underground for a long, long time. So the first part of the exhibition really explores that moment as a really critical moment in the development of Chinese contemporary art.
Yeah, I guess like in that kind of beginning process of curation, I was curious, was there a work that kind of struck you that inspired your direction with the show specifically at all?
I think quite a few works, actually. Yeah. I think, you know, there's, as you say, there's four thematic sections to the exhibition, and that first section kind of sets the scene in many ways. And I think it's kind of a bit of a historic primer. It's a bit didactic in a certain sense, because it has to introduce the audience to the history of what comes after. But from there, the exhibition really very quickly moves into more recent practices. Because of my time in China, I was working with a lot of artists of the post-80s generation and the post-90s.
Mm.
And so it was really important to me to show some of the most recent practices.
Mm.
There's a couple of works, I guess, which very early on I knew I wanted to include. One of them is a work by Xu Jian. Xu Jian is this incredible artist, and I think he, in a way, sort of straddles the first wave and the second wave. So really connects that pre-1980s group with the post-1980s group of artists. His work in the middle of the exhibition is a work called Hello. Aesthetically, it takes the form of an incredibly huge Corinthian column. It's approximately 8 meters by 8 meters by 4 meters. It looks like this massive Corinthian column sprawling on the ground in the shape of a serpentine shape, kind of like a snake.
Mm.
But it's also robotic, and it works on a sensor. So when you approach Hello, he looks at you. And as you move around the room, he will follow you. So he's kind of an interesting character. I find him kind of quite cute. but there's also something quite menacing about him.
Mm.
And for Xu Jian, really, the Corinthian column is kind of symbolic of the zenith of Western civilization. He's a metaphor or a symbol for Western civilization. But what Xu Jian is really interested in is the way that when two cultures converge or encounter one another, that encounter is almost always asymmetrical.
Mm.
I guess he's thinking about the sort of semi-colonial period in China, where you had the French and the Russians and the British opening up colonial areas all across Shanghai, the concession areas, and the way that the Corinthian column as an architectural form came with that colonization. If you think about all of the historic buildings along the Bund in Shanghai, for example, they're all financial buildings, banks, stock exchange, they all have Corinthian columns out the front. And so those kinds of institutions that came with colonialism were never a part of a symmetrical relationship. They were always an extractive relationship.
Mm.
And so he's alluding to the nature of that asymmetricality.
I feel like you've kind of touched on quite a lot, I guess, throughout our conversation, these four connected themes, these ideas of connection to land and changing landscapes, urban life and migration, private and daily life and transitioning into the digital era, kind of running through the exhibition. I feel like you've kind of touched on them, but I guess in with these binding themes, were there any connections that surprised you or connections that you would point viewers to that are maybe less obvious but stand out as particularly interesting to you and kind of manifesting in the show?
Yeah, so I think the four themes together, what I was thinking of in a way was what impacted me most when I was living there, what was my personal experience, the conversations that occurred between myself and other artists about what was most impactful to the social situation in China and impactful to the artists' lives, their lived experience, and obviously the things that really impacted them, with this vast and high-speed, hyper-accelerated change since 1978. Of course, from 1978 to the year 2000, you have 400 million people move from rural areas to city centres.
Mm.
The shifting nature of family relationships that comes with that move. Many artists are migrants themselves.
Mm.
When you have these people moving to urban centres, often moving away from ancestral homelands, moving away from family, the sense of isolation that comes with that. These are all impacts which I think are also familiar to us.
Mm.
That sense of hyper-acceleration is something which I think feels especially relevant right now, particularly in the last half decade or so.
Mm.
But then I think there are also some surprises. The third section of the exhibition, I guess, looks at really the impact on human relationships and on expressions of intimacy. So, for example, you know, in the 1980s into the early 1990s, it was still, I guess, somewhat taboo to show personal affection in public.
Mm.
And that slowly began to shift in the 2000s. You see an increase of artists beginning to explore human intimacy, the representation of the nude, other forms of human relationships and intimacy, you know, in terms of LGBTQ relationships. You see a lot of artists expressing their homosexuality for the first time.
Mm.
And these expressions found articulation in various places. And I think that will be quite surprising to a lot of audiences who don't expect that from Chinese contemporary art.
Mm.
And maybe have a certain perception that that's not even possible within Chinese culture.
I think you kind of touched on it there, but I think what's really interesting about this show as well, the exhibition is zooming in on artists from China and their interpretations and experiences throughout these four decades of transformation. Its concepts are very much so global, and this idea that the works are trying to subvert the idea of China as exceptional, but rather as a vessel representing the global experience of living in a state of forever tomorrow. I guess with that, do you have any hopes for viewers engaging with the exhibition in that respect, or any points of reflection you hope are taken away, and I guess that global experience that you can see in the show?
I think from my perspective, I think typically what often occurs with exhibitions of Chinese contemporary art that are presented outside of China is they tend to take as a model two complementary narratives. And one is to present Chinese contemporary art and Chinese culture as somewhat other, somewhat exotic, somewhat uncanny. Or they tend to present Chinese contemporary art as being acts of resistance. And hopefully this exhibition provides a greater level of breadth to that dialogue. I think there are works which, for some people within the Chinese community, for example, will be evocative of a sense of nostalgia, or will connect them to stories that they might have heard from family back home, or from their parents who immigrated here, for example, that enable them to see something of their background that they might not necessarily have personal connection to.
Mm.
But hopefully for a non-Chinese audience, it will also upend some assumptions about not only about Chinese culture, but about the lived experience of these Chinese artists.
Yeah, beautiful. I guess I kind of want to come back a little when we were talking about the themes and kind of the journey through the space. I feel like the journey you've taken the viewer on as they walk through the exhibition feels quite intentional when moving through each space and theme of focus. Even I noticed with the like repeated windows kind of looking into each space, which were really, I think, a nice touch. Can you talk me through a bit about the curation of the space itself and, yeah, I guess how you wanted each space to feel as the viewer made its way through?
I guess I had two ideas in terms of the look and feel of the exhibition. In a certain sense, there is a certain thread that runs through the exhibition, which if in the first section of the exhibition it's about artists encountering and engaging and beginning to explore a new international art vernacular, by the end of the exhibition, I think there's something of a return to a more national language. Artists who are not only working with new technologies are also working more closely with their own local stories. They're beginning to reconnect with certain concepts of, say, Buddhism or Taoism, certain rites and rituals that might exist among minority cultures in China. So the exhibition sort of runs in a full circle. I kind of imagined the exhibition to be like a samsara. So beginning connects to the end in a sort of a timeless circle. And so the design of the exhibition reflects that. So the windows that you mentioned are a very traditional, what is called a Hui pattern, a Hui style window. And a Hui pattern traditionally is a geometric pattern which can be repeated ongoing through infinity. So it represents eternity, or the cycle of constant return. And those windows connect both the first section of the exhibition to the last. So when you're at the end of the exhibition, you can peek back through to the beginning.
Mm.
When you're at the beginning, you can peek through to the end. So again, beginning and end is connected.
Mm.
I think that was a very important subtext to the design of the exhibition that people might not necessarily be conscious of or pick up an awareness of, but hopefully it just creates a sort of a subtextual framework to the show.
I'm glad I asked you about it. That's really beautiful. Yeah, it's been so great to hear about the show. I guess to kind of end our corridor today and kind of conclude your reflections on it, what do you think the significance is of bringing a show like this, a survey and celebration of contemporary Chinese art, to Tamaki Makaurau specifically?
Well, I think in a number of ways. I mean, obviously this is the first major survey of Chinese contemporary art in the country, in the country's history. For me, I guess when I came back to New Zealand from living in China for almost a decade and coming back to Auckland, a city that I hadn't been to since 1998, the thing that really struck me was how quickly the Chinese community here has grown. The Chinese community here is almost 200,000 strong. And of course, one of the mandates in a certain sense for the art gallery is to represent the communities of Tamaki. And that's all of our communities. So I think it's a really an important moment to sort of stop and reflect and take notice of who those communities are. It's a community that's grown so quickly that I think maybe it's taken some people by surprise and they're not fully aware of just how important it is to the social fabric. Beyond that, I think it creates an opportunity for both the general public in Tamaki, but also for artists to experience different cultural values and different artistic expressions. And I think that's really important for cultural expression in the city.
That was my interview with curator of Auckland Art Gallery, Toyo Tamaki's newly opened Forever Tomorrow Chinese Art Now, Hutch Wilco. The exhibition is on until the 23rd of August, so check it out.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
You're listening to Various Artists here on 95BFM. Keep it locked. This is Hung Up by Moyne.
I'd been too demanding in the first phone call. I dialed again. Hello, I said, and even faster. Thank you. I'd been too demanding in the first phone call. I dialed again. Hello, I said, and even faster. He hung up. He hung up.
Sparrows, if you're listening right now, then this message was meant for you. Claim it if it resonates. I've got my tarot deck here. I'm going to pull a card to illuminate an intention for you. Just shuffling. Ooh, it's the B card. This card represents prosperity, greatness, clout. Oh, I love this for you. Expect an abundance of free things. Music, merch, coffee, ticket?
Get a B card today from 95bfm.com for just $4.20 a month and be in to win tickets, albums, and more.
Audio. Culture.
Tune in to 95BFM Drive every second Tuesday as they're joined by one of our friends from Audio Culture, sharing the songs, stories and salacious scandal from which is woven the mighty tapestry of New Zealand music.
Audio Culture, more cultured than a blue cheese with a BA. Every other Tuesday on 95BFM Drive.
Thanks to Audio Culture. Iwi Waiata, the noisy library of New Zealand music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Crisp biscuits and fresh vegetables every Tuesday from 7 p.m. Replayed 4 a.m. Wednesday and always online at 95bfm.com. Check it.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Antonia Barnett McIntosh is a Tamaki-based composer, performer, sound artist, editor, and curator. Her multidisciplinary practice often seeks out various modes of connection through collaboration, collaborating between the threshold spaces of speech, music, performance, rehearsal, composition, and writing, drawing connections between mediums, finding this mutual thread between artistic outputs to build upon, often working with musicians, dancers, poets, visual artists, and filmmakers. In her current exhibition at Room, Ponder of Transported Local Delicacies, Barnett McIntosh presents a beautiful sound installation which comprises captured moments of field recordings and speech, applying this musical thought to speech that approaches speech as an instrument in itself, tuning into its inherent musicality, reflecting on this in-between state of the live and the documented dwelling in one's mind and body. The sound work itself is dispersed across four channels, creating this dynamic sound landscape that morphs and shifts as one moves across the space. Alongside the sound installation, Barnett McIntosh offers a secondary mode of documentation within the show text through a piece of writing by writer Lisa Samuels. Samuels will also be involved in a collaborative activation of the gallery space with Barnett McIntosh through a series of performances, emphasizing the active liveliness of the gallery space and the circulative artistic discourse. I caught up with Antonia about the show as well as her overall practice.
Kia ora, my name is Antonia Barnett McIntosh and I live in Tāmaki Makaurau. I whakapapa kai tahu, still researching a lot of that, kind of histories. Yeah, and I lived quite a while in London and Berlin as well before kind of returning.
Yeah.
My practice kind of started in like classical music composition. But then I did a master's in London. That's kind of what I was doing over there and ended up collaborating with a lot of people from other disciplines. And so I kind of broadened my practice from there, which became quite experimental and collaborative cross arts kind of. Yeah, a lot more experimental since then.
Yeah, wonderful. And your current exhibition on at Room, A Ponder of Transported Local Delicacies, presents this beautiful liminal sound installation. I'd like to start this conversation by speaking a little bit to the beginnings of the show. Did the specific work come off the back of a previous project or rather find its footing in something new that you really wanted to dive into?
I guess, yeah, everything I've been doing lately has been around speech and the musicality of everyday speech, or how sometimes if it's for instruments as well, has been text-related, like verbal scores.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm interested in speech generally at the moment. And this piece itself kind of formally is similar to a work I did a few years ago at Bundanon, in rural New South Wales. So in that it's four channels and is made up of speech material, found sounds, kind of some found objects and playing around. There's like a little bit of cello in there and some, and field recordings. And so I think, Yeah, I've tried to balance the four channels, so not one is like a soloist in any way. They're kind of all complementary, so you could listen to them all at the same time, or you could kind of walk up and closer and kind of focus on one, and the others are kind of in the background, and then you change which one it is.
Yeah, nice.
And it's quite short, so it's 6:20, so you could kind of spend whatever time you wanted to kind of explore the different layers of that.
Yeah, beautiful. And what drew you to sound work and installation and performance within your practice? Like, what does this mode of artistic communication kind of allow you and offer you with these conceptual ideas that you were kind of circulating within your practice?
Yeah, I guess coming from the more like grounded musical composition space, it was very much, you know, like the composer is in a room writing a score and then hands it over kind of to players and is often part of that rehearsal process, or I like to be, and then you kind of collaborating in that way, but it's very much like I've done this and then you do that. When I've started collaborating, I've been really interested in working with people so that we're kind of dual directors or dual... Yeah, we're collaborating together and our parts are equal. So my expertise might be in the music composition side of things, but what we're both bringing together from different disciplines or even the same discipline sometimes, then, yeah, it kind of works together in a way where it's a conversation. And so we're all kind of making... in the making, and sometimes it takes a lot more time to do that too, like all together in a room.
Yeah, the patience and the, you've kind of got to take the time to listen a bit more, like rather than if you're just in your own thoughts and your own thing, you've got to take that step back and listen.
Well, also explain sometimes.
Yeah,
so yeah, different words mean different things to different art disciplines, right? So yeah, there's a bit of translation and kind of exploration around language there. So it was through collaboration I got into more performing because, I mean, you know, I used to play the cello on the piano and I still do a little bit, but I had kind of done less of that and then got into performing quite a bit with, a few people from different disciplines, particularly around speech. And so then that kind of took off as my, like, instrument in a way.
Beautiful. And within this specific installation piece, audiences are presented with this wonderful sonic index of sounds grasping from various moments of speech and field recordings. Do you want to speak a little bit to these recordings? Where did these snippets kind of arise from?
Sure. So I'm kind of constantly taking notes and, like, listening to how people speak, what the languages that they're using to communicate, or how their conversation might overlap. And I think of speech, especially in this context, as being like an abstracted musical kind of unit, I guess, units, plural.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about rhythm and texture and how things are kind of composed together, layered up, like as if it's kind of a harmony and it's quite melodic. And so I'm kind of, attributing musical thought to speech. And then some field recordings, like there's a cello note in there and there's some, like, recordings of a river and some, like, squeaky floorboards and things like that. Just sounds that I liked when I heard them and recorded them. Some of it's, you know, like I heard some school kids talking on the bus about their grades and someone said a low E, which is like direct musical reference in a way. And so then I put like this low E in the piece, you know, and so it's kind of, bits and pieces of that. And then I was reading a book about kind of amateur naturalism, like people exploring natural history. And so there's little, you know, I kind of have taken some found text from various different places. And that's where the, like, lists of animals and plants kind of come into it. And I've tried to keep everything kind of quite even. So in that way where it's abstracted sound, it can kind of just, you can experience it as a wash of sound and text and you can listen to it without caring about the meaning, or you can find some meaning in something as an audience member, kind of,
Yeah, lovely. So you've got these kind of sounds that you didn't maybe intentionally kind of go out looking for, but they're, but you were just kind of like wandering around and you find them and you're like, oh, that's really, that's really nice.
Well, I guess part of like the conceptual side of it too is that I was kind of interested in reciprocity and mutuality and time and travel and mapping and things like that. And so I guess it's kind of passive in that way that things have come to me, but I've then been actively listening in order to kind of create an awareness around them, to kind of include them and put them in conversation with each other.
The state of, I'm gonna be a bit more like in tune with my surroundings in order to like dial in to to my specific these, because quite often you can go around not noticing these sounds and not noticing these things that are around you, and then once you do, it's like, oh, then you can't not.
Yeah, it's that kind of presence that's there, or like feeling present, and also that presence of, I kind of talk about it in the booklet a little bit. So I've made a booklet with Lisa Samuels, who did some exhibition text alongside the show. And so, and there I kind of write about collections and also, thinking about the lived experience being like what's really live and what's in front of you, and then some of it's like memory or documented things and how that can kind of coexist. And so I've tried to put that in the installation, that kind of idea as well.
Lovely. And then from these capturing of the recordings and of these moments, how do they then move into this layered sound piece? What does that like combining and editing kind of process look like for you?
I guess for me it's intuitive in a way, but it's like based on my experience and my practice and the way I would compose something generally. And sometimes in my practice that has been kind of like chance based, and so ordering things together or combining certain aspects, musical aspects together by inputting some kind of different options and then combining them in ways that are sometimes quite unwieldy. And for this, I've just tried to get that balance between the channels so that they're kind of, if there are, like where there are field recordings, they're kind of evenly spaced across the four channels. And same with the speech and the kinds of material. Like one doesn't have exclusively the field recordings and another one exclusively, the stuff about natural history. It's kind of spread across. I also quite like works that kind of start and finish and you can just drop into it and leave it. And it doesn't, so this has shape and there are textural structures, but at the same time, it's like this, it's in a particular sound world. And also it plays on loop without any break. So people can't really tell where the end is.
No, I was there and I didn't think I could. I was like, have I listened to the whole thing? Is it repeating? You kind of get swooped into its own little world where you don't quite know where you've intersected it maybe. And I wanted to speak a little bit more on the installation of this work. As you said, the sound is fragmented between these four individual speakers, which it's really lovely. Like, I think when I first walked in there, I didn't quite realize that they were all different, and it's kind of not until you move around that space where you really have that really, it's quite dynamic, like different experiences as you walk around the space. Do you want to speak a little bit to this decision behind this kind of fragmented sound installation?
Sure. I mean, I guess for me, when I was working on it, I didn't really think of it as fragmented. It's kind of an interesting word that you... I love that you've had that experience.
Do you know what I mean?
It's spread. But for me, it's like I could listen to a recording of all the four channels together and that's kind of the whole, and then it's been kind of dispersed and moved around. And I think there's only one moment where it's kind of the same expression said in different ways that happens at the same time across all speakers, and that's kind of the only time that happens. And it's kind of partway through. But I don't know. I just kind of intuited which would want what when. and I quite closely edit. And if I put something together and the timing is not quite right, or often I'm like experiencing it with a beat of a certain kind in a certain place, and then the beat might be different somewhere else, but I'm thinking of speech in that musical way where words relate to each other, but there's still a pulse kind of happening in the background. Things kind of pull it together and then pull it apart again as well.
I feel like it, compared to if the sound was just projecting from one speaker, by having that, I don't know if this is right, like spatializes the sound and creates it more. It brings the sound more into the space and makes it more of like a interaction with the viewer.
Yeah, well, the speakers themselves, Yeah, they're from like a home studio kind of thing. Yeah, Audio Foundation helped me out big time and loaned those. So yeah, they're from that kind of experience where it's like a surround sound kind of home studio experience. Yeah.
Nice. And you have kind of touched on it already, but I wanted to speak a little bit more of this kind of documented dialogue of sorts between you and Lisa Samuels that's in the show text. It offers this really beautiful alternative mode of documentation to the work. Do you want to speak a little bit more in depth about that conversation and why you chose to document it in that show text?
Well, I've been really interested in Lisa's work for a while now, and so I was kind of exploring how my practice kind of comes from music, but it's quite speech related, and her practice as a poet and essayist and thinker is kind of comes towards speech as well in that way. And we're both kind of interested in, when people speak, having different layers and different shapes and sounds and that kind of polyphony around it, and that meaning can kind of be interjected, I guess. Yeah. That's probably more me. The meaning can be kind of interjected between like different layers of speech. And so I asked her to write something and completely just trusted what she would come up with. I also sent her some other recordings of other sound installations I've done in the past, and kind of often I then make a version that's for performance with headphones. And so, when I've done these sound installations before, there's like a kind of 5-minute performance alongside it, which is me with headphones listening to some speech that I'm trying to relay live, like with the goal of sounding like this like score in my ears. And that can be quite difficult, quite layered, and I'm kind of navigating my way through, and the audience is trying to navigate their way through at the same time. I feel like Lisa's work also kind of comes into that in a way. And so, on Saturday we're also going to be performing together a couple of new works, which have kind of come out of this. And some is related to headphones, some is reading and like rules-based kind of game play with, kind of compositional ideas around the text that's in the booklet that we've made, as well as, the work from the installation itself.
Yeah, wonderful. That was going to be my next question to ask you about that. That all sounds wonderful. But I was also going to ask how this kind of performances and this activation of the gallery space, how they specifically speak to and kind of interact with the sound work. Like, how do they kind of layer upon each other, and how do they communicate in that space?
Yes. Okay, so I that's a great question. I kind of think already there are lots of, before even the sound installation exists, there are lots of versions of the work. So there's like my notes that are handwritten in a notebook or maybe on my phone. There's like building up a score, there's chopping it up and rearranging it and editing the text itself. Yeah. And then there's me recording some of that stuff and then editing it again. And so there's kind of all of these layers. And I kind of think also coming from like a live music practice, that it's really nice to activate spaces and galleries, and the sound installation kind of exists there. But it's also, interesting to me to kind of bring people into the space in not a formal way, but a more formal way to, engage with it in a different kind of medium, that liveness. And so trying to kind of incorporate that, or often I will run like workshops and things like that around the practice to kind of see it from different sides and experience it with other people in the room, which I think is really important. Like, I didn't just make a thing to be like, oh, yep, that's me. So to bring people in, and we'll probably have, a few minutes, we'll be around to chat after the performances. And so, just having discourse around the work itself is kind of important to me too.
Yeah, activating it in like multiple ways by having those performances, but also by allowing a space for more dialogue to take place and having that discourse kind of make a more circulative discussion and everything.
Yeah, so that it's living. It's not just like static in the room.
No, it's not the dormant thing. It's like, oh, I've made and it's done and now it's here. It's like, no, it's still kind of producing and activating off that.
Yeah.
That thing.
Well, also there could have been thousands of different versions of that sound installation. That just happens to be how it ended up this time with that material. So using that same material, it could have been, any number of different kind of iterations of it. Yeah. So I quite like playing with that as well.
Great. And lastly, what are your hopes for audiences engaging with this work?
Well, I don't want to project anything on anybody. I feel like it's quite open. I mean, speech is something that most of us do. And, so for people to kind of go along and just experience it and get out of it what their experience and knowledge brings to them, and also maybe they might hear something new that, sparks something else. But, mainly just to kind of come along and experience it and reach out if there are any questions, I don't know, have a chat about it.
That was Antonia Barnett McIntosh speaking to me about her current show On At Room, a ponder of transported local delicacies. The show is on until the 30th of May, and there is also an accompanying performance by Antonia and Lisa Samuels in the gallery space on the 9th of May, which is tomorrow. So that's from 2 to 2:40 p.m. tomorrow at Room. So yeah, be sure to go check that one out.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
We'll be right back with the arts guide, but in the meantime, this is Pink Frost by The Chills. Enjoy. You're listening to Various Artists.
Thank you.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists. It's paintings in there.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau, as mentioned on the show, Forever Tomorrow Chinese Art Now is on at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki until the 23rd of August.
Also mentioned on the show, A Ponder of Transported Local Delicacies by Antonia Barnett McIntosh is on at Room. Also on at Room is a series of completely accurate self-portraits by Brittany Walker-Smith. Both are on until the 30th of May.
Opening tonight at Melanie Roger Gallery is Dark Matter, a group exhibition showing Simon Andres, Harry Cully, Simon Atwell and Kirsten Roberts. That's on from 5:30 till 7:30 p.m.
Bound Earth by Rufus Knight et al. Is on at Let Thomas until the 30th of May.
Whippersnapper by Hamish Coleman is on at Season Aotearoa until the 23rd of May.
Revolutionary Mania by Luke Willis Thompson is on at Coastal Signs until the 6th of June.
The Blue Dome by Selena Ashadi is on at Artspace Aotearoa until the 4th of July.
And August Ward's World of Interiors is on at Ivan Anthony until the 30th of May. If you have something you want on the Arts Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I koro mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us today.
Hutch Wilco
and Antonia Barnett McIntosh.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa, te rā wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove, this time with Sam Harmony. My name is Soph.
I'm Maya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95bfm.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.